You're listening to the good.
Don't call me Paino.
The bad.
Absolute.
And the rugby.
Folded like a deck chair.
With Paino, Lord, and the Husk. I don't know what that means.
Hello, Dream Team, and welcome along to another episode of The Good, The Bad and The Rugby in partnership with City Index, the leading provider of spread betting, CFD, and FX trading. It's good to have you with us. Hope you had a good bank holiday. The Lord and the Husk are alongside once again, both full to the brim of both Asher and Easter eggs. Does that
brim
make sense?
There he is.
49.
What is that? What is Asher anyway?
I don't actually know.
There you go.
Well, imagine I'd like to fill up Asher.
Fascinating question, that.
I'd like to fill up Asher. I'm not joking.
Happy Easter. How was it?
I had a fantastic Easter. I went to watch the wife compete down in
Norfolk.
Did really well. Finished 10th, and it doesn't sound like it did really well, but it's one of those sports where the rider will still be happy because it went clear show jumping, clear cross country, no time faults, everything went smoothly, and then it just comes down to dressage, and unfortunately, nine of the horses did slightly better dressage than she did.
Can you tell when you're watching?
It's a hard thing to judge because they're happy because the progress of the horse was good,
right?
And then unfortunately, Class Affair just had tripped in the water and had to run out, but it still went generally. Improvement was seen.
When you're watching Zed do dressage, do you know what you're looking at?
Hell no.
Right.
There's obvious things in flying changes and whether they're on time and things like that. But no, I've got no idea on the actual, because they're judged on how they walk and their extended trot and
right.
Yeah, so
it's
no.
Not bad. You've got more than I thought you'd have.
I know all the movements and half pass and shoulders in and all sorts, but I don't know what is a good shoulder in and what is not a good shoulder in and what is it.
Well, neither does her horse, apparently. Joking, Zed.
It's a bit like me in the boxing, so I'm struggling a bit at the moment, but I had been doing a bit of sparring and I was being told that I'd won rounds when I got absolutely no idea what I'd done, and I'd lost rounds and I got absolutely no idea what I'd done. The magic of sport.
Yes. Yeah.
Asher is a Hebrew name meaning happy and blessed.
Oh, well, I am full of that then.
Are you happy and blessed?
I think so.
Were you full of chocolate?
Some would say cursed, others say blessed. Yeah.
How was your
Am I full of chocolate? No, I was full of rosé on Saturday. I had a little birthday celebration at a certain location in the middle of the country. It was good fun. Completed rosé. Lost the ability to speak at about 6 o'clock. had a lovely time with a few friends. My young wife was there for a bit and then went to bed, and I stumbled in at a certain time in the morning. And yesterday was one of those bits where we could have stayed at the pet place, but I sort of felt like I just needed to get home into a safe environment. And I just sat eating Pringles and dip, and then fell asleep, went to bed at 7:30, woke up at 9:30 today, refreshed. Ready to go.
What's amazing about that story is you've put absolutely no detail in it at all, and yet I think everybody knows exactly
what
it is.
Exactly
went to
happened.
A place, and I can't tell you what time I went to bed, and then I went home.
And that's the best way to tell a story. No one got incriminated. I didn't offend anyone. A couple of people hijacked me for photos. You're actually not allowed to have photos at this particular place or any of those places. And I'm too polite to say no, bugger off, but I did. So there's probably some photos lurking around of me looking absolutely steaming.
Plus
I'd like to say, if you were to catch me drunk, would it surprise you? You know, it's like I've built such a honest appraisal of myself normally in the media that if you went, oh, James Haskell called me a fucking prick, no one's going to be shocked.
No.
I fell out of a car, had a fight, said something rude, offended someone.
There'd be who you are.
Yeah, there'd be no surprise. You know, if you went, oh, saw Chris Robshaw, cool, you know, do that. Everyone would be like, oh, did he? That's awful. James Haskell's done what? Lucky he didn't kill him. Anyway, another drink.
Nice Easter service.
Lovely service. It's like being back at school, double church. Church at 9 and then church at 11.
It's weird. I was forced to go to church almost every weekend for my entire, well, from sort of age 10 to 18, and then a few times in the week. And it's just forced, isn't it? Forced religion.
So it's one of those when you get in, you look at the order of service, you go, actually, this shouldn't be that long.
Oh, yeah.
And then they hit you with a 45 minute from nowhere.
But then you find out the choir are singing four songs.
Yeah.
They make a song that looks like it should take 2 minutes, 14 minutes, because they go from verse one to the chorus, back to the first verse, back to the third verse, back up to the chorus.
Covered a desk cants.
That is so true, actually. You know, I always get the programme. I don't think it's called that, the program events. And I do
you get
look,
your signed afterwards by the Archbishop.
Please remind me to tell you a story about that in 2 seconds. But I literally got the program, you do, and you go, oh, well, that's the Lord's Prayer. That's done quite quickly. That what they got to get you is a bit where it's like a descant and a thing where it's just one line.
Well, the sermon.
Yeah.
A good sermon can take 7 minutes. Yeah, yes. A bad one could be an hour and 10.
Yeah. But it's the extra bits where it's a choir or a musical part that drags it on, and then the hymns, you see it once and then you've got to repeat it again. There's a lot of trickery going on. A good service, 25 minutes, including the walk-in.
Yeah.
I'd say. But no, I'll tell you this. So my grandfather was an entomologist at... Imperial.
What is entomology? Is that skin?
No, it was into bugs and like you know, he was very instrumental in helping deal with the locust plagues in Africa and decimation of food and all this kind of stuff. And he got an award from the Queen. And with that award means that you can get, I could get christened at St. Paul's Cathedral, which I was, and I can get married at St. Paul's Cathedral. And he unfortunately passed away, and as part of the thing, could have a service at St. Paul's Cathedral in the smaller chapel. So went there, obviously a really sad day. My dad's really upset. You know, grandfather's a bit of a legend. And we're there, and obviously he's coughing gets taken, carried out. And just as the service finished, the priest comes up to me and goes, oh, James, you couldn't sign this for me, and made me sign the order of the service, my dead grandfather's funeral. And I honestly looked at him for 30 seconds, like, a bit weird, the priest taking the piss in the middle of a really sad, moving service as my dad's dabbing his eyes and the coffin's just making it to the back of the hearse. And I literally signed the thing to, you know, Father Doodah. Thanks so much. He's like, oh, I'll keep that. It's like, wow. Where's the line? Where'd you go? I think you might step over the mark.
I think the line's become a dot by that point, hasn't it?
I like that. You are full of surprises, though. Entomologist.
Yes, incredible. I mean, obviously, hopefully he was related to me, but judging by my level of intelligence, perhaps he wasn't, but yeah.
What I was going to say, having seen your very nice procession into the... Were you in Windsor?
Yeah, St. George's Temple.
And I mean this genuinely. I think you're dressing really well at the moment.
Oh, thanks.
Sharp suit. I think at Cheltenham you were dressing really well as well. You need a little tailor on the go.
Well, Kevin and Andy generally help me out, but then actually, and so do, there's a company called, I always don't know whether I pronounce it right, Chapar, Chapar, which are like, they're stylists that just send you clothes.
Right.
So they look at stuff and then they go, okay, I'll send you a box, and then you pick out stuff that you like, send back what you don't like. You never have to go and shop. Nice. That is my.
I don't shopping. Have you down as a snazzy dresser, but I think every time I see you now at a work do, you're looking mint.
I'm always going to blame James Sleater from Conan the Dandy. If I don't look good, it's his fault.
But it's amazing.
Ka-ching, plug, bing.
You know, obviously the boy from Wakefield. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? That slowly, you know, when he first came up, he had like raggedy clothes, a flat cap covered in bits of coal.
Yeah, coal.
He had a bicycle with a loaf in it. Yeah, he had that.
Came up on a dust car and now he's riding around an open top carriage.
He had elocution lessons like Pygmalion to be told to speak. Ear, queen! No, don't. That's not how you say it. And then slowly.
It's a great northern accent, that as well, isn't it?
Ear, queen!
Ear, queen! That's down my way in Dorset.
Sorry. All right, mate. No, that way. There's still that still Dorset.
Have another go.
Oh, God. I can't remember.
Come on, have a run-up.
Okay.
Northern.
Right, Queen. Yeah, you're right. Queen. Oh, mate, I've had a fucking great time, mate. Love
it's
it.
A bit Manchester, though.
All right, doesn't matter. Sunshine. Wait, get my jacket on. I've got to see the Queen. Now he's slowly growing into that. Because obviously, as well, he's moving up the pecking order, isn't he?
Yeah, he's
slowly getting
snakes
there.
And ladders.
Snakes and ladders.
Do you ever on weekends like that, get out of the four-poster bed and ring the little bell for your cup of tea in the morning, just think, how in God's name have I ended up here?
Pretty much every time I'm there.
Do you really?
No, I never ring the bell, obviously.
Yeah.
But no, it's
just hollow down the corridor.
Is it a bit like strange. Coming to America? Do you get into a bath and a
royal penis?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, I'd make that as a point of thing. Going, listen, I don't, you know, want to modernise. Can I get a giant bath, please?
Right. Easter is not only a time for chocolate. Actually, I got through quite a lot of gin this weekend as well.
It's lucky we all like gin, isn't it?
Yeah. Transplaining chocolate for gin. I don't even know if that's a word.
It's not.
There is also a lot of touring that's about to happen because obviously all the grassroots clubs go off on tour. Harry Payne's actually off with Richmond Minis next weekend.
Is that a father
Flying
and son?
No, because we're away. We're in Sheffield.
So who's going to get a surrogate dad?
He's got his mate Bertie and Bertie's dad George.
Lovely.
Taking him off.
Lovely.
What goes on tour stays on tour.
Yeah.
We're going off on our tour as well. And I think we're sort of leading into a show on touring and tours, particularly off the back of Jack Noel.
Anyone else slightly nervous about our tour yet?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, I'm sort of.
Are you?
Yeah.
What are you nervous about?
I don't know. I think it's just getting that Sheffield one done, I think, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it's no different to the things we've done loads of times, but it's just the crowd is bigger.
I'm a peacock, you'll let me fly, I'm fine.
The peacocks fly?
No, that's the point. I was going to say pheasant as
Kiwi.
Well. They sort of fly pheasants.
Yeah, like phoenix. I think it'll be really good fun. I think we get in the groove, we'll be absolutely fine.
The only thing I'm concerned about is just finding the level. We obviously set up this podcast during the first COVID. We haven't really met a lot of our fans. We had a couple of live events, and we have
driven most of them away. Thanks to those that have stuck with us.
We have some very loyal fans. Obviously, the trailer for the first Good, the Bad, the Ugly went to number one across the world, which is pretty special. So we know we've got a good following. So I think I'm looking forward to meeting them, but also just in this kind of world we live in at the moment, social media, is I sort of want to tell a few stories, but just don't want to get us cancelled halfway through. Do you know what I mean?
You do a bit.
Well, I do actually a little bit, yeah. I just want to play. I want to see that Andrea from Hello is going to be lurking in the crowd.
We walk that line.
We do.
And we have to.
Well, you two do. I'm trying desperately to try and keep you on the right side of it.
I don't know. By the end of this tour, we'll have pushed you.
You swear loads now, so you've gone. You're on our level.
No, I don't.
Yeah, you know, I met some guy that was a big fan, love the pod. I was like, yeah, oh, even the swearing. You know, I'm a real man of the world. I was like, oh god, if that's the level, you're crazy. I like a bit of swearing, but not too much.
Jack Noel is the spark to our show on tour.
Yes, yeah.
I mean,
he's a good tourist.
As theirs go, wearing a Munster shirt to watch your team Exeter at Thomond Park play Munster is up there?
I would say it's...
Man of the people.
Yeah, I would say it's pretty ballsy. I'd say what's interesting is that actually, obviously, it's just very funny and no one would care.
Yeah.
But Ben Teo.
Yeah.
Do you remember he posed in that Ireland shirt?
Oh, yeah, he did.
And everyone went mental. And we're like, I can't do that. I did that once I put a shirt on.
He did that before he then came to play for England.
Yeah.
When he was playing for Leinster, he posted an Ireland.
Yeah, who cares?
I don't.
No, but people do care. So I heard
the rumour that Jack Knowles actually signed him for Munster and he was over there for a meeting.
I love that. Yeah.
That is a lie, by the way.
Well, or is it?
Oh, is it?
Or is it double bluff? No, I think it's quite cool.
Space.
I did that once at Wasps and put on another shirt from another team and put it in the group and everyone got a bit upset. Oh, I don't think it's a bit disrespectful. I was like, oh, relax.
All right. We did ask him to see if he wanted to come and explain whose stag, why he was there, who made him wear the Munster kit, but we think he's still going.
Yes, I would suspect he is, yeah.
What I did like is obviously he broke his arm in that Paris game, but prior to that, I'm off the booze, I'm not drinking anymore, it's really helped my performance. I suppose, well, you've got a little interlude.
I did like the fact that he also found the tightest Munster shirt he could possibly get into.
Yeah.
Painted on.
Yeah. Okay, so... Should we start with our tour? Do you want to start with the tours that you went on? Should we talk about where touring fits into the rugby landscape and why it's so important?
Obviously, touring is massive. It's two separate things now. We tour for the grassroots clubs. It's still very, very old school. I keep getting asked to go on the Minchin Hampton like summer tour, and I'm like, lads, you don't want me there. The last time you sent me a picture, you were dousing each other in alcohol and setting each other on fire.
Right.
So
that's why they do want you there.
No, it attracts a certain level of media attention.
Yeah, yeah, yes, as is, it would not be good for them.
No.
Right. I think they've got less to lose than you, though, somehow.
But that's the point. He knows himself.
Fraser's definitely got less hair now. But yeah, they have, but I'm not sure they would. Like that heat.
Right.
But it might still happen. Yeah. Might still happen. But I think, because we sort of went through early times where tours weren't too professional.
Yeah.
Whereas now I think it's a whole different kettle of fish. I don't know what Hass says about that. 2016, it's more clean fun that you end up having rather than. There's obviously a midweek veg can still have a few beers and everything and get into a little few scrapes, but nothing major.
Yeah, I mean, I've had a few good tours in my time. I'd say I just think about it now, it's a flashback to an under-19s tour in France, in Vichy.
Oh, yeah.
And we got very drunk, and Tom Croft and I stole a boat.
Oh.
And we thought, it was so funny, how we're stealing a boat. We rowed this boat into this Midland lake, stole it. It was a great time. And then we just sat there, like, well, right, what are we doing now? What are we now? And then it was like, oh, we could actually probably die out here because one of the oars fell in the water. We just had to paddle back. And as we went to paddle back in, the boat, there was a big dock. The boat just started, I got out of it, just Crofty floated underneath it. He managed to get back out of it. And then I went back and I tried to bring a couple of girls back to the hotel. The receptionist wouldn't let me.
By boat?
Not by boat. We found them lurking on the way back. And then the receptionist wouldn't let us in. And I think I spanked him and said he was being a naughty boy. And then I woke to bed, no memory of it, woke up and... Yeah, it didn't go down too well.
Do people mind that?
I think he wound it. I think he, you know, I don't think he was into S&M. Maybe it was afterwards.
Right.
But no, I think it started. There are those moments, but we didn't have camera phones then. So kind of those moments where stuff started. I'd say predominantly, especially with England, I changed my whole mindset after 2011 and just basically was never going to.
That was a hell of a tour.
Yeah, never going to do anything on tour like that. You know, never going to drink or try because it just wasn't worth the time. I'd rather wait two days after until we went to Ibiza. Or went to Vegas and actually had fun, as opposed to doing it on duty where everyone's trying to sort of stitch you really and catch you out. And that obviously that tour was, went pretty turbo on a number of fronts.
Because you also had a bit of amateur ethos, let's say, in the early part of your career.
Yeah, the first one, South Africa in 2000, was still very amateur. Really? Yeah, it was brilliant. But I think all the way up to 2003, I mean, even in the World Cup in 2003, we went out after every game. We always had this thing, the best way to get over jet lag was get on it. So we had 2 days on it as soon as we got there. And so, yeah, it was good.
Oh, I love brilliant. That. I was just thinking actually about the tours. I'd say the age group stuff, actually, the boat stealing tour, they were pretty real loose. I remember the first one, under-19 tour to South Africa, New Zealand one. Went down to the room, all the Kiwis got excited, never had a drink before, like throwing TVs out the window and all this kind of stuff, like trying to rouse up security. That was pretty terrifying. You look back at it now and think, oh my God, what the hell were you lot doing?
I mean, so 2016, obviously, with England was your finest moment in an England jersey, and 2017 as well. How far have they come? Is there fun and...
There is.
Or is it much more... kind of straight
no, there is.
You're there to do a job?
There is. I mean, you know, 2016 was great. Obviously... I mean, the best part about, I think, being on tour is people do get up to stuff and then you have to come clean to the group. And I said before, Johnny May just does the whole the ticking clock on the mic and just does it for so long that someone, you know, goes, right, lads, anyone got anything to say? Johnny's like, the whole time. Everyone's like, fuck, okay, I shagged her. Right, get up, tell the story, what actually happened. And I love those kind of moments. But I'd say, yes, there's still a bit of fun, but... You know, I mean, even in 2015, one of the players went out on a night out and I was in the team and we were playing France that day and he wasn't in the squad and he had a night out and came back in a police car, right? And you'd think that he would just go to bed, but because he'd missed a meet, he decided to come into the physio room and everything steaming. And obviously physios are notorious snitches. And they obviously told, you know, the head coach and he got reprimanded because he'd woken up in a doorway, a family... I tried to open the door, found him woken up in a doorway, and they'd obviously called the police because they were like, really, he was incoherent and he just arrived in handcuffs. They let him off, but he walked in, obviously got found out because he could have said he was ill, but unfortunately he got found out. So that was still, what was that, 2015?
Yeah.
That's pretty, you know. But I'd say the modern stuff doesn't really happen. Like, you have a few stories and nights out, but it's just so, I think it's where you've got a responsibility it's not really worth it, you know, where you could have some real fun and do stuff, but it's just not worth the... The hassle.
The better you tour, the better you play.
Without doubt.
I was going to say, the better you tour, the worse you play.
But I think you've got to know. Everyone's different. I was always the better you tour, but I was getting taught off Jason, Lowell, and me and Bolsh under their wings. It was we didn't really have a choice on it. Gets you in trouble sometimes.
You know the boats and hose stories, don't you? I told you that.
Which one's that?
So. We were in.
It's got a lovely title.
Great title. So we were in Sydney, and it was 2010. We'd come off, I think, an all right Six Nations or whatever, gone on tour to Australia and Napier as well. Two Test series in Australia, one game against the New Zealand Maoris in New Zealand. And after the first Test, the sort of midweek veg, like, oh, we're not really going to play. And one of our Ugo knew a guy that used to go to Wellington who was. A investment banker who was living in Wolverine's penthouse apartment in
Hugh Jackman's
penthouse apartment. So anyway, we got talking. He said, "Oh, do you boys fancy lunch on a day off?" So he's like, "Yeah, no problem. We're going to do it under the viaducts in Sydney waterfront." So anyway, myself, a few other characters turned up for this lunch, and it was like, you know, not, a little bit of Sauvignon Blanc, relaxing, chatting. You know, we had a day off the next day, and we were supposed to meet the whole team later for a team dinner, but you had a day off to do what you want. Didn't think we were going to play. We played the night before. So all eating food. And then the table next door was this woman wearing like a red coat from like the Queen's Guard jacket with huge bolt-ons. Ridiculous, right? And she's sitting there and we're chatting away, drinking. And this bloke goes, "Oh, could this lady have a photo with you?" So I turned around and said, "Yeah, if you want to, turn around." And when I said, but the button was under more pressure than we're going to be on this tour, doesn't work out. I mean, it was a lot of tension on it.
Yeah.
She's standing there And we said, yeah, you can have a photo. As we went to the photo, this bloke pulls out the most professional telephoto lens. And I thought, oh, it was going to be, she was going to rip a top open. It was like a stitcher, because it happened to Phil Greening, didn't it? And Joe Worsley outside Edinburgh, apparently.
Yeah, after, actually, after training in Scotland, it's like, oh, can we have a photo? And like, got a group of lads in. A few boys sort of went, let's not do this. Or sort of walked away. And as they took the photo, but...
And so the journalist who did that messaged me into the show, because I told the story once before, and he was like, actually, it was against this game, just details, it's quite funny, but it is a true story. So anyway, we had the photo. I crept onto the end because, like, I do not want to be involved in this. The cans come out.
Very unlike you.
Very unlike me. So we had the photo, thought nothing more about it. Anyway, after lunch, they'd arranged for us to get on a boat and go around Sydney Harbour. So everyone's a bit steamed up. And as we got towards the boat, he said, I've got a bit of a surprise for you. And as we got the boat, there's 10 girls in lingerie on the boat, right? And I've looked at him going straight away, going, this is not a good idea. And all the lads are, oh, bore off us. Like, no, what's the story? And they were like, no, they're PR girls. Like, you know, they work for an agency. They're just going to serve drinks. And I said, okay. So we're on this boat, lingerie, all the lads are really super excited, handing out drinks. Bear in mind, this is an England tour, middle of the day in Australia, in Sydney, handing out drinks. And a boat starts pulling out, and I'm at the back of the boat, I'd say Dozer's on it, obviously. Doz at the front, talking. All the lads are spread out. Some of them, you know, relaxing, reclining. And as we're pulling out the harbour, I see this guy swing round with an even bigger telephoto lens. Swing round, and I'm like, lads, get down. I've dived down the side of the boat. No one else has heard me. And the boat's like, snap. We've left. Anyway, had a real nice time. Going around the harbour, looking at everything.
Sightseeing.
Sightseeing. A lot of motorboats around. and then we got to dinner, met up with the lads. Everyone's like, oh, what a day. You know, everyone's steaming. Great. Had a great time. Thought nothing more of it. And then when we played Australia, I ended up being on the bench. We beat Australia in Australia. And coming off, everyone's celebrating. What a massive, you know, John Wells. What a great game. Everyone's high-fiving. And we come into the change room. And Doz is like this, like looking at me. With the hand, like, cutting his throat motion. I was like, oh, fuck, what's happened? Jono just comes, James, this is how he sounds. James, we need to have a word with you in the showers. I was like, oh, fuck, have I done now? And he's like, have you been sleeping with prostitutes on a boat? And I was like, no. He goes, well, we've got News of the World, I've got a story. You and some of the lads have been on a boat full of prostitutes and you've been having a sex party all around Sydney. And I was like, no, John, I haven't. And he was like, Doz are getting here. He's like, how's that happened? I'm like, no, we haven't done anything. I said, there were the PR girls that we didn't do anything. It's absolutely fine above board. And, you know, and then the media guy's there and goes, well, I've got the story. Are you telling the truth? So I said, yeah, we haven't done anything. So anyway, thought nothing more of it. They're having that media storm, you know, everyone's panicking, typical RFU, rushing around, making them 10 times fucking worse. But actually, that was the first time that they actually turned around and said, no, you don't have a story. And it went from the front page, and because we won, it was like, you know, it was going to be front page, England players in prostitute scandal. And it turns out the woman with the big cans had was a madam, a famous madam. And because we got a photo with her, the whole story had got together that the boat was full of, they were her girls on this boat. They weren't. And I was calling up this investment banker, going, you fucking prick. What have you done? You know, I said, this is my career up in smoke. He's like, I promise you, they're not.
That's got nothing to do with it.
I said, I know where you live, Hugh Jackman's. We're going to burn it down. Anyway, so we got the story ended up coming out, and it went from page one to page eight. Boats and Hoes was the title, and it obviously redacted most of it because it was bollocks. Yeah. But you see the picture of the boat, and there's Doz at the front taking a photo of everyone, lads. Like reclining, one of the pictures, they'd done that thing where they did a zoom in bubble. Yeah. You could see exactly who it was. That particular player was getting married. That when he got back from the tour, and then all you see is my feet sticking out of the side. And like, that was that's not every day that you get accused of doing that. And that's just not that was just normal procedure.
You know, Balotelli's "Why Always Me" T-shirt. Yeah. I think that would be a very good GBNR
for you
replica.
Yeah,
best tourists,
Leonard and Lowell.
Are there any unsuspecting ones?
Austin's a very good tourist as well.
Is he?
Yeah, because he is loose.
Energetic.
And he doesn't care.
What made Jace the king of the tourists?
Well, he never tired. He was there. He was relentless. He just hollow legs, so you never could fill him up. And then he'd just keep going. And he'd always, because of his history, he knew someone everywhere.
Right.
If I look back now, it wouldn't have quite seemed that way. But when you're young and you just... you never have to queue, you never had to do anything. It was just following those two, the show that those two were. And Jace is the nicest human being on the planet with the best memory for people as well. Where he met them, when he met them, it was incredible.
So he
could always find someone to party with as well.
He had the keys to every city, as it were, and knew everybody. Even when he didn't necessarily know the right person, did he also have the gift of the gab to get behind the velvet rope, as Hans would say?
Yeah, of course he did. With his little cockney slang, he's always got the right thing. But then, you know, him and Lowell would be the first one to grease a few palms if it needed to be as well. So, you know, you're learning from the elite. When you were hanging out with those two.
A lot of readies and hat to hand.
That's why me and Bolsh were just literally in their slipstreams. Yeah, in their slipstreams, just following, soaking it all up.
And did you see...
Phil Greening's a good tourist as well, by the way.
Okay.
Very good tourist.
Because?
Professional operator.
Yeah.
Long time single and a lot of fun.
He's such a good boy, Phil.
The last to tell a million stories. What about the modern lot? It's a very different type of touring.
Yes, it is completely. Again, because
a lot of people would point at you actually as an energizer and a.
The only thing, what it is, I even though I have that sort of demeanor as a sort of a bit of a party, I actually wasn't like that, and I'd get a lot of heat from the guys going, "Oh, where were you? Went on a night out." I mean, I say something like Danny Cares.
No, it's not necessarily that. You still energize people to get out and do stuff.
Oh yeah, we do that. But I say something like Danny Care was pretty good. You know, he was always being the thick of it.
Fodes wasn't scared of it.
No, Fodes was absolutely not scared of it. If I was on England duty now, the one thing I'd say to any manager who's got a good security team, make sure everything's covered, secure, don't let other people in. I think I told about the Lions ones, where, you know, like we had some elite security team with England who were like brilliant. And when we got on the Lions, you think, oh, Lions are going to be spot on, right? They had the security team. And the first dinner that the president went to, he got manhandled, like thrown into a wall. So it came back and we're like, oh, next day we're all like, you know, with midweek veg, our own security. It's like, you boys did well last night. And like seething. It's like, you know, the only person on the tour that needed actual security, you let him get filled in. I'm like, yeah, whatever, James. I said, well, you know, did he get filled in or not? Like, well, you know, our attention was elsewhere. So we'll just look after the old man because he needs to stop getting filled in. Then anyway, we then go to a gym. And one of the guys in the gym, the security are there, supposed to just be watching. Security guy is doing shadow boxing in the mirror and doing biceps. And one of the Kiwi people in Christchurch starts attacking one of the lads, like going, "Hey, fucking prick, get up!" You know, having a massive row. We've had to pull him off and gone, "Listen, mate, relax, go away." Security have come back 10 minutes later, "What's going on? Don't worry about it, mate. How's your biceps, right?" So we were getting into them and it was getting slowly more, they were getting slowly more incompetent. And one guy was like, "Oh, look, James, you've got to stop taking the piss. We're working really hard. You don't understand the demands on us," right? The same guy, I popped down at like 12:30 at night to get a water from the team room. Yeah. And he's like this on the sofa, just asleep in the corridor. I crept past him, took a photo with him, crept off and put in the whole team group. It's the security at their best again. We're then at another place and got a security guy is practicing karate chops on a bag, but like not even like proper discipline. It's like karate chopping, kicking, but his legs only get about a foot off the air. Awful. All these people come piling in the back exit, going through the lads' kit, asking for autographs, disrupt the session. Well, that's security. He's got his headphones in, axe kicking everything like your dickheads, right? So they got so bad that I was relentless. I was like, "You guys aren't even security. You're like stewards. You're like crowd stewards." He's like, "Oh, how dare you?" And I served. I went, "Well, not where, but then." It's like, what are you doing? And one guy was really staring at me, one meeting. So, oh, you know.
One of the security guys.
Yeah. And I was like, "Oh, you're giving that 1,000-yard stare, are you, mate?" He's like, "You want to kill me, don't you?" He goes, "Yeah." I goes, "I tell you why you wouldn't, because you're so fucking useless. You probably forget where the body was, you craphead. Get cool." So they were so wound up.
Just
so,
making friends.
By the end of the week, we got into them so much that on the last night of the tour, just on the draw, everyone's on the smash. We said to them, "Listen, keep the noises away when we're trying to have a nice time. Just let us be so we can drink at the table." Everyone's drinking at the table. These two beautiful girls come up to the table. One of the security guys tackles the one through the table. I was like, "What are you doing? You said keep people away, not the fit birds, you fucking idiot. What are you doing?" I was like, "You are honestly awful." So you're like, you know, your role's important, but you really shouldn't be looking after a team.
Very great. Very good. Why is touring important?
Making memories, isn't it? That's the whole thing that touring is, and what brings people closer to a team. Well, sort of Hask and I always talk about what the stuff that Sarri's did to make them, what Exeter have done to make that, them such a good team, what, you know, the feeling that you get from Quinns at the moment in terms of what they're trying to do, what obviously Al Sanderson's taking up at Sale. You know, you spend that quality time together then and make memories, because that's why Sarri's went on all those trips. You know, when they're in their away changing rooms, they bring all those photos of those times together to remind people about, you know, the sort of band of brotherhood that they were, and obviously the Wolfpack sort of mentality is that they're better together. And I think that's what touring is. It's about really strengthens those bonds of friendships and actually makes you part of something. Yeah. And that is what touring is all about. And when a tour goes well, all you get is good memories, good times, and you actually want to play more for those guys. You want to put your body on the line a bit better. And am I wrong?
Yeah, no, you are. I'm just thinking about...
I'm all right.
I think about...
You're Matt Nolan.
The Band of Brothers thing, but, you know, there's always someone that gets left behind. You know, everyone's like, buddy system, right? Where's your mate? As long as your roommate makes it, you're fine. But you'll always get on the bus and be waiting, but like, where's so-and-so? You're like, what do you mean? He'll be not in his room?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I'm
HP playing. was terrible for that.
Yeah, I mean...
Paul.
Yeah. Well, he never played for England again after his first cap.
Yeah,
like, you just refuse to get up in the next day, and it's like Clive's like, "Where is he?" And he's like, "Oh, tell him I'll get my own flight back." And then it was like dust; he was never seen again.
Wow!
And it was to say, "Sorry, HP. I hope you don't mind." It was the same for Gloucester as well. So, unbelievable player, was such a good player, Henry Paul, but he loved getting on the smash.
Yeah.
So it was my 30th, and Gloucester played Bath. So I'd moved to Gloucester, and we were playing at the Rec. So I had a 30th. So everyone came back to the farm, and we'd set up like in one of the indoor schools, like a bar and, you know, human table football and bucking broncos and all sorts. It was where everything goes wrong. So obviously Barks and Flats are like best mates, but Barks bites Flats' missus's finger, so Flats knocks him out. And then HP's just walking around with two bottles of vodka, just like drinking from the bottle. And anyway, the next day, the Bulls win... his brother wins the Super League.
Yeah.
So he gets in the car, drives up north to go on the smash with his brother on Sunday. 3 days later, we're in training. No one's seen him. No one's heard from him. So like, everyone's like trying to ring him, just answer phone. And then Dean's like, rings him, and he's like, "Oh, Dean, yeah, I'm really sick." And he's like, "Oh, right. What do you think's the matter with you?" He goes, "Well, I think I've got bird flu." He's like, "Oh, right. Where are you?" He goes, "Oh, man, I'm in bed." And Dean's like, "Okay, can you come open the door? I'm at your door." He's like, "Oh, Dean, sorry, mate. I'm up in Bradford. I'm still out with my brother." He just didn't ever come back. And then Dean punished it. He never played for Gloucester again. And he basically was the kit boy for the rest of his contract. Most expensive kit boy I've ever had. But when it can go wrong, it can go wrong.
I mean,
it can go wrong.
That tours go really wrong. Where, you know, like someone... You're on tour and like you're like full of energy. You're like, "Yes, this is going to be amazing. This tour is going to be brilliant." Guys like really excited. On this one particular tour, this guy in particular like really excited. Once we let loose, not the strongest morals. And he obviously somehow had already had a bit of a tour girlfriend, and he'd been messaging the tour girlfriend really excited, like, "Hey, I'm coming back out to see you." Da, 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 not knowing that his phone had connected to the iPad at home, and his missus had read it. Seen everything, cancelled his credit card, emptied his bank account, done everything. So he's landed in this country, just got his message going, "I know exactly what you did, here's this," and turned everything off. And it was like he'd gone from, "We're having a tour," to all week, like completely, stuff like that. And then you're like, boy, he's having to take loans from the lads, and also it's day one of a tour. One particular bloke, same thing happened. He came back, she'd taken everything. But when I say everything, she took the carpets, took the fixtures off the sinks, left him a plate, a TV on the floor, and a knife and fork in the middle of it, and took, when I say stripped the gaff, shredded his passport, and left. And then coming back from that tour going, "This is amazing, love, honey, I'm hurt." "Honey? I'm fine." I'm finding shit like that. Mate, that's loose. Leaving someone on tour. There's a great one. I mean, obviously, there's a few ones where they wake up, you come to their room, and they're in a real sorry state. I mean, you know, there's a few people who've maybe had a couple of accidents where, you know, alcohol's slightly worse wear and things have come out both ends and they're sort of embarrassed. I think you might have been on that one. We won't mention his name. But he, that was the poor one of the coaches. Like, I can't believe it. You know, piss, sick, but poo. So luckily that's never happened to me. But the poo things. But I mean, I was in Poland. I said, we went on that tour to Poland and or the pre-season, and that was when I initiated where Evan got me drunk and Sean Edwards. I mean, I don't know what's more scary, walking through a Polish wood at night, a Polish wood when you're 17 steaming, or a Polish wood when you're steaming with Sean Edwards as your guide, and it's only you and Sean in this thing, and he's steaming, and he's trying to, right, kid, I'll help you back. Like, woohoo! Like, hours, you look to Sean, Sean's like staring at you where you're walking, you're like, kid, stick with me. I'm like, yes, sir. Got back. You know, in these kind of terrible quarters where you had like a wafer thin mattress.
Wafer thin.
500 degree room. I was sharing with Rob Howley, who, you know, didn't really drink, ate a lot of sweets, shredded, you know, sort of just a bit of a weird character. I've come in, he's already in bed all night. I'm like, oh, you know, trying to sleep, broken sleep, so dehydrated, drunk all the water, no other water in the hotel. And then that's the next day I had to get up and get on the bus to Auschwitz and sat next to Craig Dowd, right? So you're already in hell. Craig Dowd's taken up with the seat, no air conditioning, 4-hour bus ride to essentially a museum of death, one of the worst places in the history of the universe. But in the morning, I woke up, I was in hell. And the only other person worse than me was Garth Chamberlain. Garth Chamberlain used to be on this TV program called, he won some competition and won a basic contract to WASP. It was like a challenge thing. It was like filmed for BBC or something where you did all these challenges and he won it. And he didn't really ever drink. And of course, the lads, as soon as you, it's weird. If you said, oh, I'm going to do a load of drugs, everyone would be like, don't do that. It's the only thing, if you say don't drink, everyone's like, fucking, what's wrong with you, prick? What's wrong with you? It's the only thing that everyone gets really upset if you don't
especially
do it. Yeah. Everyone's, oh, I'm going to do a bit of crack. Well, don't do that, Hask. Well, I'm not going to drink today. You what? You fucking dickhead. Fucking might as well fuck off home then. So anyway, Garth Chamberlain had never drunk before. And he'd got drunk, woke up in the morning, it's like so hungover, like didn't know what a hangover was. He never had that experience. Like, imagine never experienced the experience of being hungover. He had that. He was in the shower, being sick, crying, and then and he's like, he goes, "I think I'm dying." Like his roommate, he's not like, I think he had like Tim Payne. His roommate's like, "Fucking shut up."
The worst. That'd be the worst roommate to have.
And then in the night, he drank tap water. He drank Polish tap water from a forest, and obviously then got dysentery. So was basically crying, being sick, going, "I need an ambulance." They're like, fuck off. Fuck off, Garth. They don't. I'm dying. He thought he was dying. Literally, he's never experienced that. And you know, it's when you've got senior players. Oh, there's a kerfuffle in there. One of the young lads isn't right. And just these guys with absolutely no medical training were like, oh, shut the fuck up, Garth. You'll be absolutely fine with no qualifications. So he's just left in one of them showers, like, you know, water splash, a little bit of sick coming out of his mouth. And Payne said, oh, for fuck's sake, Garth, fuck off. Left him in the room. So he got out of it. He got out the tour of Auschwitz. But he was a man left 5. I've never seen someone more broken. He genuinely went in an ambulance. He thought he was dying because he'd never experienced that.
Tough times. It leads us on actually to the worst tour sort of like penalties, like the things that happen to people. We went back to Aki's. We did a show there when I was in Edinburgh. We came to play London Scottish, 2002 maybe. Got on the train at Edinburgh, which stopped after half an hour because there was so much snow on the line. So we then got a bus and a 7.5-hour bus journey down to the Athletic Ground to play London Scottish. We arrived 10 minutes before kickoff, having been sitting on a bus for the best part of the day. We lost by 70 points. They had two kids in the centres who'd played Super Rugby. And in the post-match celebrations, I can't remember his name, but the guy, I think it was our fullback, Paul, was starting a new job on the Monday. And so he lost both of his eyebrows, which is not the perfect way to start a new job. He was very, very unhappy about it. He had 2 months growing them back, and as soon as they got back to prime position, he lost them both again. Lost them both again. And it just leads me on to the sort of things where people come home having lost or been punished, or I mean, that wouldn't be happening now on an England tour. But
a good one for that was Bolsch in our first year at Bath. He played a few more games than me. He ended up going to Bordeaux for the final. And Bolsch is quite a loose character anyway. The older boys, and again, we were such good mates with like Vic, Addy, Oge, Cathy.
Ibego, Adebayo, yeah, Jomo.
The trio. And they were dangerous, those boys, because they just love going out. They were proper London sort of sea boys, weren't they, in terms of, you know.
But they must have turned up
to training in limos and stuff.
Really?
Vic did from London. So even like Yaya and everything, they were going to punish Bolsch. You know, first trip away, he obviously was a travelling reserve. He'd, And they absolutely annihilated him on the plane on the way back. And then came back and we all met in this pub and Bolsh was absolutely steaming. And then Vic and Addy lived together right near Poona Nars. And they went back there for a sort of a respite and Bolsh basically collapsed. And they fake handcuffed him to their railings in the flat. And Bolsh was so steaming, he was there for a day and a half, not realizing that he wasn't handcuffed. But he never actually tried to get the cuffs off. And he just thought he was, and he was waiting. So they'd come back in, and he'd be like, oh, mate, can you let me out? And they're like, no. And then they're just walking around. They had a party around him. And he was basically there for, I mean, yeah.
It's like that scene out of Snatch.
Yeah.
It's a security door. It won't work. And then the other time, what are you doing? Yeah. It's a push door. It won't open.
Actually, every tour needs a victim as well.
Yeah.
So we've spoken about best tourists, best tour victims. Well, the people who take it and take it and take it and they just don't mind. They just keep coming back.
Well,
they
know
that's their role.
I mean,
one
of the complaints that Level did in 2011 when, you know, all the boys did that report and it all got leaked and they were like, you know, they came out and say, you know, talking to the coaches and asking for advice was frowned on. Right. So basically, we were put in charge of like the social committee and there was like loads of fines. So if you had a dick of the day, we got a hat with a big dick on it, right? So you get lads getting off the bus mid-tour, when obviously the tour from hell, walk off with a dick hat. We had another guy that if you basically used to talk to the coaches or suck up the coaches, you get the pepper award. So if you blow someone, you have the old pepper technique, like pepper grinding. So you basically had a big pepper grinder, right? With a big
If you were listening into this, you saw you didn't get to see James's...
Good technique.
Yeah, it's a hand technique, yeah. For young listeners, don't worry about it. For lads, you probably know about it. And if you don't, have a word with your missus. We're open to all things. And he had a big pepper grinder, right, that used to be engraved with your initials. So if you, you know, every day you'd have the dick of the day. So that big guy, imagine this bus, right? So the whole world media is on it, right? Lads getting off the bus. Pepper grinder. sorry, dick hat. Someone holding a fucking giant pepper grinder with their initials walking off the bus. And then we had a mini pepper that just popped the tip in but hadn't done too much. And I tied a phone cord round this miniature pepper and we basically got it engraved. And so every time you talk to the coaches, like Brian Smith would walk up and go, hey champ, and high five you. And if you high fived him back, you fucking didn't see a pepper. So he would go, hi champ, lads, be ducking underneath it, leaving him cold. Everyone was snitching at everyone. We used to this guy called JG. Or something. He used to be a prop for Newcastle or something? And he was
Johnny
like,
Golding.
Yes. Yeah. And he was non-stop with Graham Rowntree. But he was just bullied. Like, he had the pepper every day. He's like, lads, I'm just trying to get better. Shut up, you prick. So yeah, that was great. But then obviously all that got quickly and in the complaints, they were like, yeah, no one took it seriously. If you spoke to the coaches, you were abused. There were people walking around with dicks on their hats.
Elite.
Yeah, and then the thing is, that tour itself, when you look at like the whole of it, like where it went wrong, it's like the first day we got to Auckland, the lads were staying in a casino. Two players lost their entire tour fee in the first 2 hours of being there. It was like they completely forgotten what they were doing. I remember opening my door to hear a kerfuffle and seeing one player holding a poo in a towel, running down the thing. And I was like, and you know, like you're really jet lagged, New Zealand flight's awful, and you're sort of like, that can't be right. And then it
wasn't there a dust up on the first night as well?
Yeah, yeah. Well,
in a bar.
Yes, I think so. We've got a poo, lost money, someone's door got broken off its hinges. Right, and that was just when we arrived in Auckland.
The hors d'oeuvre of the next 2 months.
Then we got into Dunedin, staying at a hotel with another casino. So the guy doubled down and lost any other future tour fees. There was, you know, like when it was like bad to worse, the manager, and obviously that the hotel maid thing happened, which is bollocks. It all went on, and then we got back and like, lads, you've got to stop fucking about. And the next day, right, who's left a severed head of a deer in the car park? What do you mean? And then in between that, you know, they're fining us for having too many Nike ticks on our bag, fining us for having pro gum shields, ball tampering, because Johnny couldn't hit a barn door with a bazooka, because Dave Redden, the guy that is kicking guru, was like
Dave Allred,
looked like a Louis Vuitton handbag tanned to an inch of his life in a tight-fitting polo. He's on the fucking golf course the whole time. I was like, instead of match fixing, how about you give Johnny some help? And they'd written all the balls, then Bobby got made the scapegoat for that. The man who jumped off a ferry, then the world media thought Tins was having a fit. Mate, it just went one thing after another until we had to land back at our own private airport, or our own private terminal, because the media were on us. And everyone's like, oh, So, lads, probably all, as you're just dispersing, catch up later. And like some people, like, head in hands. Johnny Gould has tried to leave his pepper. Oh, don't forget your pepper, your prick. Don't forget your pepper, your prick, mate. It was, honest to God, utter fucking carnage.
Can you imagine being the media manager who, 2 months before...
Well, the best thing was, we sat down the day before we travelled and went, right, lads, you know the media are going to be after them. Let's stay really tight and give them nothing.
Yeah.
Didn't go too well.
No, yeah, stay really tight. Everyone's selling everyone out, just left, right and centre, mate. It was, honest to God, it was unbelievable. And then my favourite bits of it were when, like, so the Welsh boys were obviously doing really well in the tournament. Got to the quarters or whatever, and they lost to France. And
did get to the quarters too.
Yeah, we did. Sorry, you got to the semis. But they got to the semis, and everyone's like, oh, Wales. And they're like, so hardworking. Because Sam Warburton had said, oh, I don't drink. Everyone's like, thought the whole Welsh team didn't drink. I was like, no, they're pretty much sure they'd be on the piss every single night. And we went bungee jumping. Well, also, the worst thing was Nick Easter basically didn't train for the first 3 weeks. Because I reckon he hurt his back bungee jumping, and so they got footage of it.
And that was then when Brian Moore jumped in. What are they doing bungee jumping? And then Tomo rented a bike. And he's like, what's he doing on a bike? Yeah.
All the people, everyone was like coming out with opinions. Yeah. And then the Welsh boys went quad biking, which statistically is way more dangerous than bungee jumping. More people die or injure. And the headlines were, oh, plucky Welsh enjoying their quad biking day out. Scandalous England in bungee jumping hell. And because we told the media, I said to on the day when I knocked on the door, I could hear Tins being sick. Tins, you coming out today? I've never seen him so broke. He's like, oh, I'll leave you behind. Went up and did this whole whitewater rafting thing, did everything.
I got there in the end.
You got there in the end, he did. And then it was just like, always there, but just slightly late. And they said, oh, you've got to have the media with you on the day. And I said, John, I really don't think it's a good idea. Because who was the media guy? He used to work at Sky, he used to be a presenter.
Chignall, Chiggers.
He's lovely. Yeah. I'm not sure I'm his biggest fan anymore, but or he's my biggest fan anymore. Sorry,
poor guy.
But Chiggers got, obviously he was out there. And he said, "Oh, we want Dave Getty to come with you, and we're going to take Dave Rogers, a man with the best tan in the world, Dave Rogers and Sky to come with you and film the whole thing.
We were doing sheep shearing. We were doing gold
panning, white water rafting, canyon swinging, everything." And I said, I don't think it's a good idea, John. I said, you're going to do it. I said, I don't think it's good. You'll do as you're told. I was like, all right. So we took them. So as we're up, obviously bungee jumping, everyone's giving it large. I'm jumping off like fingers to my mouth going, shh, lads are doing backwards. Everyone's having a riot, which is fine until all the hell goes break loose. Yeah. And then they're using the photos, England players in, you know, arrogant, don't give you a shit on Mike Tindall, stag do. And it just, everything that could have gone wrong, went wrong. And then Manu just the pièce de résistance on a boat trip to Waiheke Island.
Yeah.
I was downstairs with my girlfriend and I just saw this giant shadow go swizzing past the window and then body in the water. And we're like, what was that? Get out, all the Leicester boys are in hysterics. Dan Cole's holding Manu's clothes. I'm like, what the fuck's happened? Oh, we said to Manu, I bet you wouldn't jump in. Manu goes, hold my beer. And literally leapt in. And you just see him. And it was like that scene out the in-betweeners where there's, you know, there's the shoreline.
Yeah.
And you think it's amazing. Like, yes, go on, Manu, you swim. But Manu's not very good at swimming. And also, it was quite a far distance and there's boats going everywhere.
It was quite a busy thing.
And after about 5 minutes, he's still only 2 foot away from the boat. So you're like, go. 20 minutes later, he's slated to drown. You're like, this is not great. And then he's hauled out of his pants. I'm like, wow, this is going to go well. Imagine going back to the hotel and John are going, oh, what could possibly go wrong? Oh, man has jumped to the ferry and they've photographed it and they've seen it and now we're dust. Mate, it was insane. I don't know what, but it was like, I don't understand. It was small cumulative things that just added up to utter. And then Dylan's whizzing around in his Vauxhall Victor.
Yeah.
Trying to put ash in a wheelie bin so he goes down the hill. Mate, it was amazing. Then we went to that house, all the students. And I'll never forget. You know, you look back at moments that didn't get talked about.
Yeah.
On a
how
day
much,
off.
How much more could have come out of that?
Most of it was. I mean, I think it was one afternoon where myself and two other lads are sitting on a roof in the middle of Dunedin, a student house roof, actually on the roof. We've climbed up on the ladder on the roof, which is pretty dangerous stuff. We're throwing water bombs at other students. And I remember there was this little nerdy sort of like gingery kid. And I was not the most accurate throw, but I timed this water balloon and it was like slow motion. It hit his head and sort of bent round it and then exploded. And I was like, yeah, we're having a great time. I was like, I'm an England player on, like, what were we doing? What I don't know what it was, but it was just because Dunedin was so boring. That was the problem. Yeah. The hotel was like fashionable in 1934. I don't think anything else could have come out really. Well, might have been a few.
Compare and contrast touring as a player and the World Cup in Japan in 2019, what we'll do next year in France. It's a lot of fun.
It is a lot of fun. I mean, Japan for us was so much fun, wasn't it?
Because that's what you're there to do.
It built our friendships to a whole different level when I talk about building bonds and everything else. Well, I've still got pictures from you from Party On,
which was a weird
place where everyone was.
We went there two nights in a row.
It was still the same day for me.
Yes, that's very true. I think I went with you, went home to bed, and did a day's work, and then came back. You were still at the same table.
Do you remember how good karaoke was? Like you'd never say, I want to have a night out and I want to do karaoke. I thought we'd gash. It was.
We ended up with the winner of Japan's Pop Idol.
Crystal Hayes, one of the most famous singers in Japan, singing Mariah Carey, and me and you go, bloody hell, she's good, isn't she? And then I said to I used to work for ISPS Handa, and I spoke to Midori, and I was like, oh yeah, we're doing karaoke with a girl called Crystal Kay. She was like, fuck off, you were. I was like, yeah, why? Who's Crystal Kay? She's like, probably Japan's best singing artist. And then we were like, oh, actually, you can sing Mariah Carey quite well. I can tell you that.
There was one night when my friends came over. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do.
Oh God, that was
the night with the Canadians.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
That was, and they came over, and I basically stood up at 8 o'clock in the morning, and then it was pouring with rain in Japan. And I was in a t-shirt and trousers.
I'd forgotten that.
Yeah, like standing in the middle of trying to get a taxi, and taxis were looking at me, and just driving past. And I was honestly like so wet. I was beyond wet. It was like I'd been swimming. All these taxis, they wouldn't stop. I was like, please, please. I had to literally stand in the middle of the road to get one to stop.
But you'd be at so many traffic lights late at night. You're doing a 1 a.m. walk home, and there'd be a taxi that pull up, and then a Japanese guy would stick his head out, spew on the floor, and shut the door. Because they all just got absolutely
mortal.
They
all fall asleep on their briefcase. Yes. Just have a little snooze for the night.
But it also because every rugby player that's ever played the game was staying in the middle of
Roppongi.
Yeah. Every single rugby player was staying in Roppongi. And there was a place called Club 2212 or something. It was like everyone meeting at the clubhouse, and you go in there and literally World Cup. There's literally again World Cup winners, 100 cappers just around this bar. Everyone would walk in and go
mad,
what? And then that bar would just kick off every night. So it'd be like, oh, I'll see you at the clubhouse.
I mean, I'd say that was a much more enjoyable tour. No pressure of playing.
Yeah.
No pressure of doing anything. Media didn't matter because it doesn't matter. Who cares? No one's, James has to misbehaving again. Doesn't matter.
No.
So I'd say that's much more fun.
But also, we got out far more and actually saw the place. Obviously, we did Hiroshima. And we went up to, when England were playing in the quarters, we went up to Oita we were going around the places where they wouldn't let you in because of your tattoos. You're like, you don't want to come in here. And we're like, okay, we won't go in there. It's moving on. And, because no one believes you when you go, oh, you've been all over the place. Yeah, but you see a rugby pitch, a team room.
And a bus.
And that's about it. Whereas I loved our tour because you actually get to go around and see anything. And fantastic railway system.
I would say it's the best tour I've ever been on.
2019?
Yeah.
Oh, mate.
I think it's up there.
What I'm saying is media trumps playing.
I think it was spoiled a little bit because you were still in your fighting phase. So you'd always disappear off to get your head kicked in by someone. And then you'd come back with bruises.
The thing is, that's funny. I think about that now. I was going mid-tour doing jiu-jitsu three times a week with that guy and then come back.
Out for lunch.
Come back, do something else.
More fighting, out for lunch.
Out for lunch.
The thing about Japan that was so extraordinary is how... So we were there for 3 weeks, I think. The first 2 weeks, the number of times we were utterly broken at 7 o'clock at night, meet downstairs, it's going to be 15 minutes, we're all in bed and the light's out by 8. And we go out for a ramen at 7 and they just pop a little...
Sake.
Little sake in front of you.
But that was the...
Then next thing you knew, it's 4 a.m. and you're in some sort of day-glow nightclub with absolutely no idea how
you
got
there.
But
what we did, that was the combination we created, was a lager with a sake chaser.
Yeah.
That's what we had every single meal. And so we were basically doubling up on alcohol and it just went down so well because they had little glasses. So you think
the fact that you could go into any restaurant, it might look like the biggest dive and you still get a killer ramen.
Yeah.
there's a cockroach walking past it, but it still tasted so delicious.
Oh. I've never been in a city which picks you up and carries you into the night.
Quite I'd say it's the best city in the world.
And you have to look up and down rather than just left and right, because you might miss some
and then you have to look over your shoulder.
France 2023 has got a lot to live up to. We were going to talk about our tour. I'm actually really looking forward to it. This has energised me for the next month.
Actually, we could get our listeners to, if we go through the tour, where we're going and where we'll be driving, some suggestions
actually,
of
that would be
fun
really,
things we
really
should be doing
helpful.
on our drives between shows. Because obviously the first week is jam-packed between Sheffield, Liverpool, Manchester,
Edinburgh,
Newcastle,
Cardiff,
Edinburgh or something.
Newcastle. So that's a really good shout.
If there's any clubs as well need me to DJ as an after party, I'm in.
If, dear listeners, you've got any good suggestions as we tour throughout the month of May, let us know. We start in Sheffield on the 29th. We go Liverpool, Edinburgh, Cardiff, Newcastle, Manchester, Nottingham, Plymouth, Swansea, Dublin, one or two good places to go there, Oxford, Birmingham, London, Bath and Southend. If you are coming along to the theatre tour, we are very much looking forward to seeing you. We are putting out a call because part of the show is going to involve you, dear listeners, and your best rugby story or stories. It can be about absolutely anything, however tenuous the link to the game that we love, but it's got to have a chance of trumping one of your two stories from today. Some pretty strong opening gambit, so we'll say.
It was a warm-up as well.
It was a warm-up, yeah. We sort of started without knowing where we were going today.
Just on the tour thing, we need restaurant spot, night out spot, and something we should definitely
daytime activity
in each one of those places. And if I would say message the Good Bad Rugby, we got an email. Do we have an email that people can contact us?
info@goodbadrugby.com.
but you can't make one up.
I think that is a thing.
Or
send it through socials.
Send it through socials or to the Good Bad Rugby socials. We need to know that, because actually I've become obsessed with Guinness. I follow a guy called the Guinness Guru and he goes around grading pints. That's one I'm very excited about, going to Dublin.
Oh, is that the what's it called, that
there's one called Shit Pint of Guinness, but he's a reviewer, but the Guinness Guru I really like, and he goes around.
I've quite fancy one. Just checked the website, info@goodbadrugby.com does exist, and actually sales at goodbadrugby.com if you want to sponsor us.
info@goodbadrugby.com
if you realise that we're not doing a good show, production at goodbadrugby.com.
info@goodbadrugby.com for your restaurant suggestions, location suggestions, nightclub suggestions, and if you want to book me for DJ while we're on tour to blow the coffee.
But if you do the production when you get a very angry
coffee hotspot.
Coffee hotspots as well.
Yeah, please. Yeah.
I've got the best coffee. I've got
Coffeeology.
The app's called Best Coffee.
All right.
But it does find you the best coffee.
Okay. Just to wrap up the touring element of this week's show, we have, as we've mentioned a couple of times before, teamed up with Vodafone in partnership with the British and Irish Lions to support grassroots clubs' return to rugby. This Saturday, the 23rd of April, we are heading across the bridge to Aberdare RFC. The Aberdare Minis are running out, for whom I'm hopefully going to have a game. Tins doesn't get all the glory. We're going to be on call to put them through their paces and get the match ready. And after a day full of rugby, we're going to be doing a big old live show in the clubhouse in the evening, which apparently is sold out. And to top it off, Richard Hibbard and Fionn Lewis are coming down as well. So looking forward to seeing both of them.
Did you have a tour with Hibbs? Was he a good tourist?
2013.
No, I didn't. Unfortunately, I didn't know.
Just want to get the story out about his hair again. Because you know, he never cut his hair during the season. That was the whole thing.
Did he play with him at
Gloucester? It's a Samson thing. He thinks that he loses his strength if he cuts his hair during the season. So he'd have it cut once a year. Yeah.
He was.
I never played. He started the year after I retired.
He was mighty fine in that third test in 2013. Looking forward to welcoming those two, as we said. A big thank you to Vodafone, who are driving this, and to further their support of grassroots rugby. They're also developing a resource on their V-Hub for all community clubs across the UK and Ireland. This will help small businesses developing their digital capabilities following the pandemic, which we'll know is much needed. Keep your eyes peeled for a brilliant toolkit if that's your thing. We are set for a bumper day. Can't wait to get stuck in. And if you're in the area, as always, we would love to see you down at Aberdare Rugby Club this Saturday. Come and get involved. A very quick word on the Champions Cup round of 16, Tins. Home and away fixtures. Ellis wasn't a fan, but we've had some belting two-leggers.
Yeah, listening to a few, and it does change people's mindsets, doesn't it, when they know exactly what they've got to do. And, you know, if people 19 points behind, they're always going for the corner rather than taking points. It's funny how people sort of adapt their tactics. It made for some great ties in the end. Obviously, Quinn's unfortunately losing by a single point, late misconversion, wasn't it, by Marcus Smith, but he also set up that worldie of a try for Marchant. Yeah, which is always what you want to see. But there were so many games that ended up being tight because over the aggregate, which is what you want. So I think actually
in terms of entertainment, even though the players might not like it, I think the entertainment didn't really let anyone down, did it?
Yeah.
You know, and it brings us on, you know, Toma Parkshire, you know, when we go, it is Toma Park.
Yeah,
he's almost convinced Thomond. Me, Thomond.
Yeah, Toma Park.
You know, there's going to be some great quarterfinals.
Well, there's not going to be one at Thoma Park because Ed Sheeran's got the gig.
Oh, so they've got to play at Aviva.
Munster Toulouse apparently is going to take place at the Aviva. Racing 92 will start as favourites against Sale. Montpellier La Rochelle is going to be fascinating. But I think all eyes in this part of the world will be on Leicester-Leinster.
That's a big game.
That's a huge game.
That is a big game. It would be. I mean, we keep talking about the fact that it's great to see Leicester back at the top table, not only in the Premiership, but also of Europe as well. But are they good enough to do that?
I think so. If you ever wanted confirmation of how we thought the Six Nations would go, you've got
four from France, two from England, and two from Ireland.
So pretty much how it dusts out. I didn't actually see Sale at the top. I thought it was one. I thought it was nicely going to be. Yeah. But Racing still, Finn Russell looked amazing, some of the stuff he did. But then he did that break and then he tried to chip it and he got tapped and he sort of gave up. And then Vianu just picked the ball up and ran through and scored. It's like, maybe you should have not switched off.
Yeah.
But then he makes that try where he, with the red card, where he just goes through a gap. He's just so good at playing close to the line. I think Sale will have their work cut out there really to beat them in France.
Yeah, that's going to be very tough.
Montpellier, La Rochelle, you know, Montpellier squeaked through in the end.
Rog looking to pick up and go one better than last year with La Rochelle.
So we'll see. I wouldn't know. If I'm honest, I don't follow all the form of what's going on in their league. But you know, La Rochelle played some great rugby, and we talked about the number eight for
Zach Mercer.
Is that Mercer and how well he's playing? So yeah, you know, people are going to keep an eye on that because 1v3 he's now a story.
In the top 14, Montpellier top.
He's now a story to watch from an England perspective as well because he's banging on the door, which means he won't get picked. I think Toulouse obviously haven't played that well, but I still think they'll get through that game against Munster. I think their class will come through
come
in the
to
end.
The boil. Dupont.
And then
terrible, terrible, terrible. Amazing.
And then probably the two best teams in the UK for sure at the moment going head to head. So it's a massive challenge for Leicester to even think that they'd be in this position last year. And what Borthwick has done, and they're playing unbelievably well. You know, they dispatched
Claremont.
Yeah,
they did the double on the mat.
And yeah, so they dispatched Claremont on the weekend. Obviously, a famous team, well, famous losing finalists, but in terms of but how the quality of rugby that they play, and to dispatch them home and away in quite comfortably and in controlled fashion, I think Leicester are in a good position to take on Leinster.
Yeah. I never thought I'd keep a keen eye on Leicester growing up in Bath, but. Given how Ellis is faring, and it is great to see them back. And obviously they take on Quins in the Prem this weekend as well, and Exeter travel to take on Saracens, so top four all going head to head. One other quick line and a raising of the cap to Dan Norton,
yes,
who has retired from England sevens with a remarkable 358 tries in the sevens format,
same as me if you count training tries.
Me too, actually.
He also represented GB and won an Olympic silver medal. He has dipped in and dipped out of the 15s game. He's obviously been at Bristol. He was at Gloucester for a bit, I think, as well. London Irish most recently. And on Twitter, Ben Ryan said, so many great memories that Dan's provided. It was one of my easiest decisions as England coach to give him his debut many years ago in New Zealand. His class, team first attitude and athleticism stood out. Top, top man.
And he's a lovely guy. Brilliant, yeah, really lovely guy.
He's a good bloke. And he was unbelievably rapid. Yeah. He was obviously in the Gloucester Academy. And you wanted to try and keep him for 15s, but he was just so good at sevens. We were never going to, the wingers that we had, it was always going to be hard for him to crack in there before sevens sort of swallowed him up. And then
But also, the good thing about Dan is finishing ability. You know, it's not just out and out speed.
Yeah.
He's got the chip and chase, he's got the run, he's got the skills. He can change direction while still going at full pelt.
Yeah.
That's mad. Especially in the sevens field, just some of the things he did to people were ridiculous.
I quite like the fact that he said in his farewell interview with Willie Lose, you know, he's loved every minute as a player, he's loved annoying everybody that he's gone. And all of his former teammates went, you are an amazing player, but you are also undoubtedly the most annoying person I've ever talked with, played with, etc. So at least he knows where he comes out.
Yeah.
Well done, Dan, on a remarkable career, and no doubt we'll see you on the circuit before too long. The final thing that we want to do this week is to say good luck, go forth and conquer Scaz, 100th cap.
Yeah,
fingers crossed.
Incredible.
Weekend.
Yeah,
it is remarkable, isn't it? Was it 2008 she made her debut? Did you do the show this week? Were you talking about that?
Yes.
I mean, 2008 to 2022.
Well, that's a good stint, isn't
she
it?
She doesn't look a day over 21 as well. That's really irritating
thing. Or the view laying. Yeah. Healthy routines. Early nights. No tours to Japan or under 21 tours to France.
Absolutely.
I'm going to definitely bring that up on the next Good Scars about the tour stories, because they've got, if you ever go to a local rugby club, the women's team are the noisiest.
Oh, and the loosest,
and the loosest.
There is a very good show, Good Scars and Rugby, if you haven't listened to it, all about Scars and 100th cap. I think you guys forced her to talk about it.
I had one flashback from the Saturday night. I was in the toilet at this particular place, and as I walked out, I saw this guy come and with people trying to get in your eye line. And I was shit faced talking to the lads, didn't really know what was going on. He's like trying to get my eye line, I just ignored him, right? So I thought it was a kid. Anyway, later that night, I stand against the wall, just chatting to the boys, and this guy came over. And it's hard because it's a podcast as well as a video, but the guy was like, I'm like, you're right, mate? He goes, and I went, what? And he went, Southwest 16s. And I was like, what about that? He goes, we proposed to get a Southwest 16s. He can't believe you don't remember me. And I was like, try and wait for a hint of sarcasm. And he wasn't. He was deadly serious. And then when I went, oh, sweet, cheers, bro, and turned back to talk to someone else, he was utterly mortified. So I'd like to apologise to whoever the hell you were, whatever you're trying to talk about, but I'm going to need a little bit more detail than Southwest 16s, because I'm 37 and Southwest 16s was a long, long time ago. But it was genuinely, it's the way he went, are you? And it was just like, I should have recognised him. Yeah. I was like, mate, what are you doing? It's steaming. It's like 1:30 in the morning, and that was his opening gambit, and he was mortified. I reckon he would go with the potentially the biggest Norse moment of history. Right. Southwest 16s, not even England on the 16s. It's Southwest 16s.
If there's
16s.
Any consolation to him, probably half of the people you've played for your country with would come up and say, yeah, that's what I didn't necessarily remember them. So
that's what I mean. But I'm sorry, whoever you were, you're probably a fan of the show. If you've got any taste. I want to apologise. Whoever you were, I'm sorry, mate. I was very drunk and I had no idea. And I'll be honest with you, even on a cold, light day with a good moon behind me, I still wouldn't know who the hell you are. But I appreciate it and I apologise, because if I did know your name and did look at the photo, I'm sure I would have had some fond memories.
Were you good for Southwest
England? Nah, probably not. I don't think so. No. I don't. It's that long ago. Don't remember it.
Commiserations to you, my friend. Well done to Scaz on 100th cap. Well done to Dan Norton on a remarkable career. Well done to Leicester, who are chomping through the good stuff this season. Shall we leave it there? We're going to do a show next week, aren't we? And then we're off on tour.
Yeah.
Wherever you're going on your tours this year, send us a picture, actually. Tag us in on @goodbadrugby. We'd love to see what you're getting up to. I hope you have as much fun as these two.
Any
have
tour
over the
stories
years.
As well? Yeah. Send them to info@goodbadrugby.com.
Yes,
tour Minch, stories. Stay safe, lads. Stay safe.
How desperate are you? If you could go on tour with Minch under a media embargo, would you do it?
I'm not actually sure where they're going. I'll probably look on the app and tell you.
I think there's probably better places to go. Like if you went, would you like to go on tour with Maidenhead or Ibiza? I'd be like, I'm already in Ibiza. Speak to you later.
Yeah, but Tins is a man of the people and still likes playing.
I think actually, do you know what? I think Tins overdoes it. With the people, like I'm gonna be interested to see on tour, like 16 dates. Like he's too nice. He reversed hot potholes.
That's a brilliant tactic.
If you're the coming in, you're set. That's what I mean. Really gnaws you out.
That's what I mean. Like people come talk to me. I'm like, I'm polite, nice, but then I'm not really interested about your old war stories, and I leave. People come to pothole Tins, and then they can't get out, and then they're making excuses. Oh, I was at a timeout. I've got to go. And Tins has like got them in, dragging them around all night. Sean O'Brien's a reverse pothole as well. Congratulations on his amazing career. Yes, he's obviously retiring.
Well, Shawnee.
What a boy! What a character! What a man! But yeah, I'm interested to see whether that wears off, because he's just too friendly.
And I just float between the two of you, trying to prevent you from killing people and trying to get him out of conversations where his guests want to go.
And actually, Bannockburn, we had a role reversal, didn't we? Or in Edinburgh, we had a role reversal. I wanted to stay out and Tins wanted to go home because Tins hadn't been fed.
That is a brilliant photo. Right. Any more? We're done and dusted.
No.
Let's get some food.
I can't find out where the Minch boys are going on tour yet.
Well done, everybody. Thank you for joining us this week. Have a very good rest of it. We have been The Good, The Bad and The Rugby. We will see you next Wednesday. This show is produced by Shara Kilgallen. The Good, The Bad and The Rugby is a Folding Pocket production. Have a goodie.
Thank you so much for listening to The Good, The Bad and The Rugby. It can't have been easy.